Fly down, rainbows in the sky, let's fly away. Like a bird, you're free to see the boundless face of the earth. Let the wind blow you.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Destructo Discourse. This is episode 11 of a Dragon Ball Z rewatch podcast. I am your host, Tyler, and on this episode I am joined by Gordy.
How's it going?
Jason.
Hello.
Matt.
Hiya.
And Dave.
Hello.
So on this show, if you're just joining us, I would recommend that you go back to the beginning because we're covering all of Dragon Ball Z in its entirety, filler included. And every week we watch three episodes and chat about it. And we also talk about various topics like tangentially related things in the Dragon Ball world and also what's Mr. Satan up to and stuff like that. This week we're going to be covering episodes 31, 32, and 33, but before we do that, I wanted to talk to you guys about, well, let's start with the video games.
I love video games.
I've heard of those.
Everybody loves video games.
I'm partial to a couple of them.
Yeah, tell me, I never really had, like, many of the DBZ games growing up.
Mm-hmm.
It was
There's
mostly
a
just
plethora.
Like, yeah, there's a bunch. Mm-hmm. Usually I just didn't have the system at the time, and I had to go over to my friends.
I am very partial to Budokai Tenkaichi 3.
Mm-hmm. Very
which
specifically.
Is, yeah, like that one was like the gem of that series. I like it partially because it does not give a flying shit about the balance of its characters.
Not at all.
Like, it is 0% worried about that. Like, you can play as a Cyberman, and you can also play as like Super Saiyan 4 Gogeta, and those two characters are not balanced with each other.
No. The fight will play out in much the way you would expect it to.
Yeah, like it's
this is not top 8 at Evo.
Well, there has to be someone in every group whose thing is that they try to be able to beat. As like a challenge run to be able to beat Super Saiyan 4 Gogeta with as the Cybermen.
Right, Matt, I was going to say, I would contest that it should be top 8 at Evo, because I can't think of a more Evo moment than someone using a Cyberman to defeat Super Saiyan 4 Gogeta.
Yeah, fair.
There's a friend of mine who that is what he does. He finds whatever the dumbest, you know, most unusable thing in every game is and then dominates with it. To the point that he once got kicked off a Counter-Strike server for winning with a gun that is not good because people thought he was hacking. And
oh,
I
nice.
Can envision very clearly him beating Gogeta with a Cyberman.
Any game that had Garlic Jr. in it, I would exclusively use Garlic Jr. just to piss off all my friends, because I would always whip their asses.
Matt, you were saying about the Dragon Ball Online before we started recording.
Oh yeah.
Did you touch on that?
Bid for Power. That's a fun little gem.
Yeah,
if you were, into the Dragon Ball Z video game fandom circa the early 2000s.
That is a specific slice.
Oh,
my dude.
Yeah. Where you got the... It was this...
The golden years of MMO games.
Mm-hmm.
Back when everybody had to have one.
World
of Warcraft was at its height.
What I think of as the age of Warhammer Online.
Yep. And you'd hear rumblings of this Dragon Ball Z MMO called Bid for Power, where you get to create your own character and run around and do Kamehamehas. And it was like, you know, whenever you see those, this is what Pokemon would look like in the Unreal Engine.
Yeah.
Oh, it was God. That.
I like it.
It was
but for
just
Dragon Ball.
A character in an empty world.
That's a fascinating psychological phenomenon.
Just
the amazing thing about it is how many times we've seen it repeated.
Oh yeah.
And no matter how different the source material is, it always plays out exactly the same.
There's something like Jurassic Park like to me about that. The just like science thought, can we do this? Not should we do this?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Like these highly rendered anime characters on prefabricated grass planes just shooting beams at nothing.
Yep.
We should.
We should do it, to be clear.
We should. That is the answer.
Yeah. This game would slowly get built on for just years and years and years. And eventually, it didn't get turned into Dragon Ball Online, but Dragon Ball Online took a lot of notes from it.
True.
To the point that it basically, yeah.
It may as well have been.
Mm-hmm. And then Dragon Ball Online got turned into the Xenoverse series.
Hmm.
Which is truly a gift,
I'll say. It really is. The bid for Power Dream finally came true with Xenoverse 1 and 2.
Yeah, Xenoverse, from an outsider's perspective, seems really interesting because it kind of lets you live out that full fantasy of making your OCs that you drew on your binder in 7th grade.
Every DeviantArt dream.
Yeah.
Coming true.
Here's my question. Yeah, Tyler, you played the Xenoverse games, yeah?
Extensively.
Okay, so did you, or did you exclusively, make your, fulfill your destiny of Wolf, of Helix?
I absolutely made Wolf.
Well, I mean, we have to ask the question.
Yeah.
Is the Xenoverse, in any of the games, is the Xenoverse character builder sufficiently robust as to allow for Voltoid?
Shit. What are your options for orbs? I need
this
to know.
This is the only metric that matters.
I don't remember.
You could probably get close with the Majin race, honestly.
I'm going to say out of the box, no, but the things that people are doing on Steam,
oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Someone's out there can
Super
make
Saiyan
a dream
Kermit
come
is
true.
Is a wonderful thing.
Yeah. That string of words just made me so happy.
That's what the Muppets were missing.
I'm just imagining Super Saiyan Miss Piggy.
Yeah.
Going up to Terrific Cell. Think again, Bug.
This is a really compelling crossover that we've discovered. I think I would maybe most like to see Dr. Teeth as a Super Saiyan. Like, that'd probably be my pick.
Oh, wow.
And there are elements of overlap. Like, the Muppets have the two film critics who are the audience.
Yeah.
And every show has an audience, as we've established.
Yes.
Super Saiyan.
Because now I'm now I'm just trying to imagine those two, you know, standing on the sidelines of a beam fight, like next to Krillin and Gohan. I wouldn't care about the fight, is what I'm saying. I just want to watch the four of them.
You want to watch Statler and Waldorf hit Super Saiyan for the first time?
Yeah, so they to finally be able to express the depths of their outrage at how bad these movies are.
I would like to see them fusion dance.
Oh, man. Well, they would make the most powerful fusion ever.
Instead of fusion ha, they go fusion. Oh!
Would that be Statdorf or Waldatler?
I don't know, but I can already tell you that the fandom is going to burn itself down deciding which one gets to predominate.
Kamehameha? More like a Kamehameha, but you don't.
I will agree that any crossover that injects the ability to spell and count into Dragon Ball Z characters is a boon.
They would be the most powerful beings in the universe.
Fozzie just goes, Nappa, Nappa.
The count would be very good at Kaioken, I think.
The count would be unstoppable.
He could slowly ramp up to infinity.
the final antagonist of Super.
stop the podcast, we're done. we've peaked.
Okay.
Well, how about we talk about this week's episodes of Dragon Ball Z?
What's the point at this point?
Hold on. Before we get to that, I am sorry. I have to take that incredible height that you just lifted us up to and ruin it and make everyone miserable.
Level us out, David.
Please. Yeah.
I, in the time since we last recorded, I made a terrible discovery.
Oh? What's that?
So, in a recent episode, I was as surprised as Jason... You know, as someone who is not educated in the lore of Dragon Ball, who generally doesn't know what's going on with it until now, when you were talking about Dragon Ball GT, and about how the arch villains of that show are dragons, evil dragons that are created from wishes that were made previously on the Dragon Balls by characters. And that one of those dragons was created from Oolong's wish for panties. I was distressed when, upon hearing that, but I was also like, okay, I have to know more about this. So I made maybe the worst decision that any human has ever made and typed Dragon Ball GT panties dragon into Google.
Oh, no.
And to my astonishment,
don't do this.
I was not deluged in terrifying pornography.
I'm very surprised.
I wish I had been. That would have been much better than what I actually know. So, have you ever, you guys ever been on, like, Wikipedia on the Star Wars wiki, where they have those articles that are like, this is what water is. Here is an exhaustive catalog of every single time water appears in the Star Wars saga.
Very meticulous. We've all been
there. Yeah. There is an article like that on the Dragon Ball wiki for panties.
Oh, no.
Of all
panties, known in the United Kingdom and Australia as knickers, are an undergarment that women from Earth wear. They play a significant role in Dragon Ball's early comic relief and fan service, which is mostly exploitation of Bulma. There is an info sidebar about panties, telling us their alternate names, bloomers, knickers, underwear, and undies. What episode of the manga and the anime panties debuted in? Users, which include Bulma, Oolong.
Is it a move?
Users?
Well, its class is clothing, so I think it's more like a piece of equipment.
Sure.
Its class is clothing.
Yes.
Yes. Yes, this tracks.
And then we chronicle every single time panties appear in the Dragon Ball saga, and everyone who has ever worn them on camera.
I'm legitimately awestruck by human beings whose brains work in such a way that they see a thing and they're like, what class is this object? Clothing.
What are its stats?
This apple is a food class red orb.
I had to share it with you all so that you could suffer as I did.
Well, great.
Well.
Let's move on.
Before we do that, I needed to ask a follow-up question.
Oh, no.
Because as a host on this show, you have a certain expectation set to you now.
Oh. Oh no.
In your research, did you type panties into dbmoves.wikia.com?
Oh shit, I didn't.
We have to remedy that.
Furious keyboard clacking to ensue.
I'm on it. dbmoves.wikia.com. No results. I'm going to try underwear. Okay, there is a listing for Bacterian.
What?
Of course, that's where we ended up.
It's full circle.
Oh, you may not have watched Dragon Ball.
No.
Yeah, the smelly finger attack, Bacterian reaches inside his underwear and rubs his groin for a bit, then, this is a direct quote from the website, then takes out a scrotum sweat-filled hand and touches his foe with his pointer finger.
Don't stop, we're in lockdown. Don't stop, there's... I hate this. I hate all of this.
I told you it was bad content. I did warn you.
I'm so glad Mr. Satan didn't learn those moves while rooming with Bacterian. I'll be honest.
I mean, this puts a new... This puts his early struggles in a new light. Let's move on to literally anything else.
Tyler, desperately lash this carriage to the rails.
I didn't expect it to get that far off, but...
I do love it, though.
Here we are, in the woods. Mm-hmm. Episode 31, the English title is Saiyan-sized Secret.
The literal title for this, for episode 31 is, Now, Goku, a final technique with everything on the line.
Very poetic.
Yeah.
Is that a haiku?
It's a bit, yeah.
The episode begins with a recap of where we left off last time, which was Goku flexing and the scouter exploding off of Bulma's face.
Goku inflating his muscles with pure energy.
And air.
Yes.
Yeah. I think maybe he's a balloon man now. He's hit a gear third by this point.
That's a different podcast.
Right.
It's a much longer running podcast.
Yes. We watch 50 episodes per
return. And yeah, we might get done in 8 years. I noted his aura during this charge up is very steamy.
Yes. He's letting off a lot of lightning and steam.
That was my next note. Goku vents excess heat to prepare for his Alpha Strike.
Mm-hmm. He's a sauna boy.
He's a mech. He's a Battletech mech, and he has to regulate his
See,
heating.
You're picking it up. You understand what's
going
on.
That makes sense.
And then I have another note that says, this episode was the translator's day off. Because something like two-thirds of it are people yelling.
Yeah.
Oh, there are some good hollers in this one.
There really are.
I do want to cut down an episode to just the screaming and see how long it is.
That has to exist already, right?
Yeah, that's got to be a supercut.
Probably.
Like Dragon Ball Z, but only screams.
Mm-hmm. Like when they cut together all the load times of Sonic 06 or something, mm-hmm. It totals to be like 20 full minutes.
It's the opposite of DBZ Abridged.
It's longer than all of DBZ Abridged.
Following is 20 minutes of screaming.
You're welcome.
Goku's power-up is causing a heck of a lot of wind, and Vegeta's having trouble keeping his footing, and the rocks that he's standing on shatter underneath him in a very dramatic slow-mo fashion. Goku launches himself at Vegeta and does a big old wind-up for a punch where he is, like, bent over backwards, and follows it up with a very fast kick and just rocks Vegeta's world for a little bit here.
Mm-hmm. He's
very much in control of the situation.
Oh yeah, he gets a fist right up in his proud Saiyan guts, boy.
Yeah.
That's one of my favorite shots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My proud Saiyan spleen.
All the way to the spine.
And I know there's some point where he follows up with like the fucking classic Son Goku headbutt.
Yeah, his parry timing with that headbutt was flawless.
Oh yeah. There was like a 75% stun chance with that if you get the frames perfect.
Mm-hmm. Frame perfect parries.
Over at the Kame House, we do see the crew for a little bit, and my only note over there is that Roshi says a thing that I think is confusing and I also think is not true.
What was
which
it?
Is that a candle flickers most violently before it goes out.
Oh, yeah.
Is that accurate?
Yeah.
I think he was just reading a fortune cookie.
Yeah, I don't think we talked about this a little bit, but I don't think that is true.
Yeah.
And it definitely moves the most as it's being blown out.
I mean, I have a candle on my desk. I can check this right now.
Are we doing some live experiments?
Fill us in as the episode goes.
I enjoy, this is kind of a side note, but I enjoy the process, like as we go through this, discovering what my notes mean when other people bring stuff up, because I have found them especially cryptic this week. I don't remember what I meant by a lot of these things, so yeah. I'm gonna enjoy that process. I wrote down candles. How do they work?
Well, there you go.
And that is what that means. So that was a fun memory for me.
Now you know where we are.
Yeah.
That's your timestamp.
This is an interesting fight between Goku and Vegeta.
Yeah,
because I feel like at this point,
I like the physicality of it.
It is kind of brutal. It feels like Goku's not even doing martial arts so much as just straight up like dirty, like street brawling.
Yeah, well, there's something to that, like structure, because I've now seen it for the second time in the next saga.
Yeah,
is that you get to the point at which skill actually matters, like. For a while, it's just, well, my power level is so high that nothing you do matters.
Yeah.
And then
it's just a numbers game.
Yeah, and then you get to the point where fighters are actually evenly matched, and what they know how to do with their power is actually relevant.
Becomes relevant.
And I really like the way that both Goku and Vegeta's actual skill is established in this set of episodes.
Mm-hmm. I like that. I was going to say, I also like how much Goku is relying on Kaioken.
Yes.
Because without that move, he would probably just get his ass beat.
Oh, yeah.
And he knows that.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the setup. Like, they explained, I think, in one of the previous week's episodes, the risk of Kaioken, like what like what the trade-off is. So like
must
I do like
not go over the triple.
Yeah, well.
You must not even hit the triple.
Mustn't you?
You mustn't, Goku.
It's not a rule so much as a suggestion.
Yeah. I find it weird that Kaioken works on like on integers instead of like floating point numbers, like decimalized numbers. I think it's odd that like there are specific set levels of Kaioken.
Yeah.
Instead of like a scale or a spectrum.
You were saying that there's a base form and then the immediate next one is times two.
Yeah, like, and then
maybe that's just the way it was taught to him.
Three and maybe, but like, can you not do like 1.2 if you just need a little bit more, or 1.5?
Just a little bit of gas.
Well, I mean, this is defeating. This is unfortunately defeating a theory that I had been kind of nursing. For how much I love King Kai,
mm-hmm.
It was people were talking about how silly it is that like the Saiyans are stronger than him, and I was just like, maybe he's just a really good teacher, and I was like, you know what, I totally buy that. Being good at teaching something is like 10-15% actually knowing it,
yeah,
and 85% being able to communicate it to people,
yeah.
And so I was willing to buy that he's like not great shakes anything else, but he's an amazing martial arts teacher. But I don't know, you're making a very strong point for him not even being good at teaching the technique that he invented. So, I don't know.
I mean, maybe it's just those points are very natural. What am I trying to say? Like, natural points for the energy to reach.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it just works. It is easier, but it is possible to deviate a little bit more. I don't know. I just think it's weird.
I will say, there's very few moments where they actually explain how techniques and stuff work in this world, and pretty much 90% of the time they don't really make sense at all even when explained.
Yeah.
So
Goku is extremely into this fight. He's having a great time, but his muscles are starting to spasm and his body is starting to fail. We get a little bit of inner monologue from Vegeta on just like how fucked up this day is for him. It's not good. He's very upset.
Turns his head away from Goku so that Goku doesn't see his very upset face.
Yeah.
Don't let him see you cry.
Yeah.
Vegeta just needs to be over here for a minute.
He does need a breather. Mm-hmm. I remember him just kind of taking a bit of a fetal position after he gets, like, gut punched super hard.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then he rants at Goku, and my note is Vegeta spit all over everything.
It is a Galaga show, and you are in the splash zone. My note is that Vegeta just can't stop throwing a freaking tantrum every time something doesn't go his way.
Yeah.
It's like,
he's not used to it.
Yeah. He's not, literally.
It's almost like he's a spoiled prince or something.
Yeah, almost. And he's like, well, fine. If I can't have it my way, I'm just gonna blow up the planet.
Vegeta gives Goku the ultimatum that he can dodge this next attack, but it will destroy the planet. So either way, Goku's getting vaporized.
Or, if you're in the ocean dub, that this whole planet is going up in smoke!
Yeah.
Vegeta launches himself into the air, he's crackling with purple energy, and Goku starts to prepare to counterattack with a Kaioken-charged Kamehameha.
Oh, you gotta watch out for purple energy, because that's how you know the person using it is either evil or, Piccolo.
Previously evil.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of Piccolo, like, mm-hmm. It occurs to me that, like, the impracticality, the previously mentioned impracticality of the special beam cannon, I mean, in a situation like this, it might work.
As a countermeasure?
True.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Maybe.
In the Discord, before we started, I sent everybody the ocean dub version of this scene, because I feel, in my heart of hearts, that this is the scene that makes everybody a Brian Drummond fan over a Chris Sabat fan for this for this early segment.
I would argue this whole episode is a good case study for Brian Drummond.
He does a very good job.
It probably got him a lot of work.
This is the iconic Kamehameha versus Gallic Gun beam struggle fight that probably the most familiar visual for early Dragon Ball Z.
Oh yeah,
like in the 90s.
That image of the two beams meeting is like independent of any specific situation.
Yeah,
anime at this point.
I was so fixated as a kid on the tug of beams, as it were.
The tug of beams. I like how it ends, jumping forward a little bit, and like kind of a weird flop that Vegeta does off of one of them. Like, like these two things are kind of juxtaposed in my mind. I think of like, you know, that great image of the beams meeting, and then I think like, and then Vegeta kind of does like a weird roll,
just takes a little bit of a nap on it.
Whee! Yeah.
He just has a nice long think about what just happened. Riding into the stratosphere.
Yeah, I love everything about the scene. This was the scene that just I've got a collection, and as we continue, I'm going to run into it again and again of just scenes that, like, blew my goddamn mind as a kid. Mm-hmm. I was losing my shit at this. The charging poses were great. This was a Gallic gun. What? A Gallic gun?
Why is he doing that with his hands?
It's a gun that's Gallic, guys.
Yeah.
Well, there's always something to be said for, like, the first time you see anything is always... Or, like, the first time you see a type of thing is always so important and iconic. Mm-hmm. Like, the one I always think of is Star Trek, where, mm-hmm. like, that was the first time anybody had seen anything like that for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the same way for kids who got into anime in the 90s.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Like, and that's kind of fascinating to me, like, in a historical sense.
Is Vegeta just, like, absolutely gone mentally? Or is... What happens if he succeeds in the Gallic gun beats Goku and he destroys the Earth?
If you are listening to the Ocean Dub version, yes.
Say goodbye to your planet, Kakarot.
He sounds like he is absolutely out of his mind, bonker shit's insane.
Unhinged.
And Chris Abbott, like, I love him later on, but in this, he's still just kind of sleepy sounding.
Yeah.
The choice is yours, Kakarot! But either way, you are going to perish!
And, yeah, it doesn't do it the justice of, like, fuck this is the worst day, I'm blowing up everything.
I'm taking my toys and I'm going home.
Basically. Yeah.
But his pod's gonna blow up with it.
Exactly! What's even
we
better?
We come back to this problem again!
They don't think these things through.
Saiyans aren't smart, guys.
That's true.
Right when this is happening is when we get the commercial break split.
Yeah.
I did this too. The commercial break that comes in between the syllables of Kamehameha. Which
that's really good timing.
The beam struggle is going, and Goku decides, it's now or never, gotta go up, and uses Kaioken x4.
x4?
Kenkai loses his shit.
Yeah. I love this animation of this part of the fight.
Yes.
Because he shouts Kaioken x4, and like a shotgun blast out of his hands,
mm-hmm.
the beam just widens, and there's like actual kickback on him.
Yes.
It's so good looking.
It slowly overwhelms Vegeta's beam. Yeah.
So as Gordy mentioned, Vegeta starts taking a bit of a snooze on this
mm-hmm.
beam as he rockets into space, and Yajirobe runs up to congratulate Goku. Mm-hmm.
And almost kills him by slapping him on the back.
Oh, agonizing.
Apparently Goku way overdid it with the Kaioken, because even touching him is excruciating pain now.
Ugh. Beam day.
Goku's not convinced that he finished the fight, so Yajirobe dips again.
I don't want to get in your way or anything.
Yeah, you've got this.
Yeah, it's fine.
He's a master tactician.
The Earth's two greatest defenders.
Vegeta frees himself from the beam, and he decides to his own chagrin that it's time to transform into a very big monkey.
His secret technique.
He can't find Earth's moon.
He goes on like a little private adventure. Just by himself to find the moon.
When he's up in the clouds alone, I love how much Vegeta cares what other people think of him constantly all the time.
Yes.
Because when he's resolved to do this, he's just glancing back and forth over and over and over again to make sure no one is watching him do this shameful thing.
I thought the same thing, and then I realized, oh, he's looking for the moon.
I like but it better this way.
My first reaction was like, is he like checking to see if anyone's looking at him?
I don't know, that's what I believe.
Yeah, I'm with you.
That second one makes less sense because it's daytime.
Well, I mean, he's been on all kinds of weird planets, who knows?
That's true.
I love the lines he's saying while he's looking for it. He just sounds so fed up. It's like, you can't just hide a moon somewhere. Where'd that planet put this darn moon?
Yeah.
Do they go to planets that don't have moons?
I would assume.
I think that if you said to a Saiyan, there are planets out there that don't have moons, they would not be able to comprehend it. I think that like the idea has literally never crossed their minds.
Well, then how do you turn it to a giant gorilla?
We do find out momentarily probably what they decided to do when they found a planet.
I guess that's true, yeah.
They do have a backup plan.
I like that he says, like, he's searching for the moon, he can't find it, and he says, like, somebody must have realized I could use the moon and blew it up before I got here. Game recognized game, Piccolo.
Not the idea that this planet might just not have one.
Somewhere I assume Piccolo is, like, hurriedly dusting off his scarf and being like, yes, that's absolutely what I was thinking. I am a brilliant tactician.
Mm-hmm. He does say that when he blows it up. Piccolo says, yeah, like, well, at least the Saiyans won't be able to use it.
Yeah, but
the side benefit.
He did it to shut down Gohan so that he wouldn't die.
So Vegeta flies back down to Goku and starts saying a bunch of, like, pseudoscience nonsense about Blutz waves and moon beams.
Blutz waves?
I love that he is explaining all of this, and just in my mind, Goku is checked out. Yeah. He is not listening at all. He does not care. It is irrelevant.
What?
Like, it doesn't even rise to the level of, like, a Metal Gear. Like, he doesn't even engage with it to that degree.
Yeah.
And this is my final note for this episode, which is that Goku literally had not noticed that the moon was gone before this moment. I firmly believe that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
I mean, he had things on his mind.
He couldn't eat it.
Yeah. He couldn't eat it, and he couldn't fight it.
Yeah. Well, now he's probably just thinking, I should have tried to fight the moon while it was still here.
Cross that off my bucket list, I guess. Never gonna fight the moon.
No. Well, he was stronger than Piccolo. And Piccolo beat the moon, so obviously it wouldn't have been much of a fight.
The transitive property suggests Blutz waves. All of this to say, we can make a synthetic moon.
A synthetic moon made of ki, I think?
Yeah.
Something I guess. Like that.
It just gives off the same science waves that they need to turn into a monkey.
The same science fiction.
I've got...
It gives them the S cells. Mm-hmm.
I've got some very good, got a very good snippet on the Dragon Ball Z wiki about Blutz waves.
Oh no.
Oh god.
Get ready.
Yep.
It is an energy source emitted by large celestial bodies such as a full moon or the Earth, when it reflects waves of sunlight. When a Saiyan absorbs at least 17 million Xenos, Xeno, unit used to measure waves of full celestial light through the retina, a reaction occurs in the tail that causes the Saiyans to transform into ruthless great apes.
That activates the ape enzyme.
This is very, very midi-chlorian-esque.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is very that.
It's kind of that, but we also have those with the S cells, as Matt continues to mention in these episodes.
Yeah, I'll never explain it either.
We'll have to get to it eventually. I think it does get brought up, but...
Oh, God. And unsurprisingly, the move Vegeta just used to make a fake moon does have its own page on the wiki.
Yeah.
And guess what? It's very boring. It's called Powerball.
Ah. Come on.
What are the winning numbers this week, Jason?
How can that exist in the same setting as, like, Ultimate Kablam Slash? Or whatever it is Yajirobe has.
Yeah. Listen, Toriyama had a cold that day. Powerball, fuck it.
So the episode ends with the transformation beginning, Vegeta into a giant ape, and the last thing that I wanted to say about this episode is just the sort of bizarre choice in the ocean dub to attribute the moon to an inventor.
What?
Matt, do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, because I got confused when I was watching the Funimation dub, because I thought this was canon for so long.
What was this? What are you talking about?
It's canon in my heart, and it's canon on this show, because I decree it. But
you're calling in your markers?
Yeah, Vegeta explains to Goku in the ocean dub that this was a move invented by Goku's father, who was a brilliant scientist.
Oh.
He says, not much of a fighter, but he was a brilliant scientist. Yep. So I will never, ever... let go in my mind that Bardock is a brilliant scientist.
And also, by Saiyan standards, he is a scientist.
Yeah.
The one Klingon scientist in the whole Empire.
Mm-hmm.
He's not really that much smarter than the rest, but...
Mm-hmm.
Listen.
But he made a moon.
Land of the blind, baby.
Yep. in their world, science is just different power techniques. That let you
know. And that's what's useful. Yep. That makes a sort of sense,
yeah.
You know, in D&D, the wizards are scientists, so...
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Episode 32, English title is Spirit Bomb Away!
And far away on the other field, the Japanese title translates to Battle Power Times 10, Vegeta's Great Transformation.
The episode begins with Krillin and Gohan having almost made it back to Kame House, but Krillin notices that the artificial moon is behind them.
It also opens with very bad dialogue.
Oh?
Come on, Gohan, we're almost to Kame House. Yeah, Krillin, I can feel we're getting closer. I just had the most vivid Vietnam flashbacks to the tutorial of every fantasy RPG. Where it's like, hello, my brother, who I've known all my life, but I'm going to call by my full name. Let's go do that thing that we've been getting ready for the past month that we all know about, that no one needs to talk about, but we're going to explain it for the camera.
The town festival is tomorrow.
Yeah, that's what the beginning of this episode is.
I like how hard Krillin is lobbying, or how, well, we'll get to that in a second.
I'm going to call bullshit on something real quick.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
I'm also going to spoil a plot point in a future episode for next week, I think, which is that Gohan is going to transform again. We all know this, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So at some point, his tail grows back. Very rapidly, apparently.
Yeah.
Which I guess it can do. I mean, we've seen that it's happened before in that really bad filler episode.
The umbrage I'm going to take is that Gohan looks back at the moon, and nothing happens to him.
Which is very clearly shining on him.
Yeah.
Well,
so the Blutz waves aren't reaching Gohan right now.
Obviously no tail.
So, right, either he has no tail, or it's a very small tail hanging out in his pants.
Not enough.
Or it grows, like, incredibly rapidly in the next hour.
Yeah, you just gotta blitz that chakra, and it'll just, like, unfurl.
You gotta blutz that chakra. I'll leave. I'm sorry.
Maybe the Blutz waves just can't reach him there.
Maybe it's a localized thing.
Yeah. Like, what is the half-life of a Blutz wave?
A ballroom Blutz. A Blutzkrieg, some might say. I'll go.
There we go. We brought it home. We got there.
We brought it home. Now take it away.
Yeah. Get it away from me.
Gohan knows that he needs to head back to help Goku. He can feel it in his guts that this is a bad situation, and the energy that they're feeling is not coming from his dad.
No.
Krillin is very opposed to this plan.
Again, Krillin is always the guy who sort of straddles the line between being an anime hero and a normal fucking human being. and now that I think about it, this is an incredible moment because this is Krillin watching the other person who acted like a normal human being become an idiot who runs into danger.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very humanizing, but I do like how hard he is lobbying
I think he literally says the line, gosh, I wish there was something I could do to help. Like, aw, jeez, aw, dang, hands are tied.
Just no point.
I got a thing. Left the oven.
I'm sick that day, Gohan.
I have to wash my hair. Ooh, wait.
Darn.
So back at the fight, the giant ape Vegeta is very, very fast, surprisingly so, and Goku is just on the defensive. He can't get any attacks in of his own. Just kind of dodging out of the way of giant fists.
He can't even get away.
He's on the ropes.
At the same time, Goku is putting together some pieces about his past that he was unaware of.
Yeah,
for like 20 years.
Goku, what's happening? He asks about the thing that he is fully aware of that has happened to himself several times.
Well, he's not aware of.
Apparently, I guess that would seem less weird to me if I had seen Dragon Ball. It seemed very silly to me. I thought it was a known quantity.
I could have sworn that he knew about it like at the end of Dragon Ball, but I guess I'm misremembering that.
We did establish in the first episode that Roshi knew and could have told him.
Roshi knows at any for moment. Sure. They all know, I think.
Probably
I
mean, a lot of things that Roshi knows.
All of his friends know. They've all seen him do it. Yeah. They've all cut off his tail.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like, it's kind of a weird fit for this.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, in a different story, there would be incredible pathos to that.
Yeah.
That Goku, like, is secretly responsible for this horrible thing, and none of his friends have ever had the heart to tell him.
It would be a whole story arc.
But this is Dragon Ball Z, so it's like what
it
Goku did
in the middle of a fight scene.
Good. And then my next note is Goku experiences introspection for about 30 whole seconds.
I crushed my grandpa to death as a big ape.
The story is that Goku never knew that he was actually the monster that crushed his grandfather when he was a child. And just now, in this moment, fighting a very mad, angry man from space, he comes to that conclusion in his head and just kind of has to, like, compartmentalize it for a sec while he takes care of this fight still. Like, I'll get back to that, I'm sure.
Is it ever brought up again?
I don't think so.
Oh, there you go.
I think he forgets.
Never gets the therapy that he needs on that one.
Puts it in the bin with rats.
Yep, just lock that one away.
I wish that was a Goku phrase. Like, I'm putting that in the Raditz bin.
It can be in our hearts.
His emotional dumpster that he keeps in his mind.
Now, I have no particular affection for the Great Ape.
Mm-hmm.
And I will not particularly defend it.
Yeah.
But I like the way that it's used in this sequence specifically. Partly because Ape Vegeta has a really cool voice, and I have a weakness for that.
Sure.
But also, it's just, like, I like that it shows that Vegeta is on another level to the Saiyans that we have seen on Earth.
Yeah.
Because for him, the Great Ape is not a berserker mode. It's a weapon that he can control.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not something... He doesn't just go become mindless. Yeah. And I like that distinction.
That is cool.
He maintains his consciousness.
Yeah. Not only that, but he menaces Goku. Like, taunts him and stuff.
Goku decides that it's time for lesson number 2 from King Kai, which is the Spirit Bomb. Goku starts to charge it up, but Vegeta's too quick, and Goku doesn't have enough opportunity to complete it. He tries to Kaioken away, but he is swatted by Vegeta's tail.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like it hurts a lot.
Yeah, probably. Like it's getting hit by a big furry truck.
I remember the first move Raditz does when he first shows up is he whips the shit out of Krillin with just his tail. Like, it is a pattern.
And that was a normal size tail.
Yeah.
It's the Saiyan version of a bitch slap, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not even going to deign to use my hand on you.
You know, that actually reminds me of a fun Vegeta kind of character quirk that a friend of mine pointed out.
What's
that? You notice that Vegeta's never taken his gloves off? Not once
in the
entirety
of the show.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
Is he
the Mickey Mouse of Dragon Ball Z?
It's because he's royalty.
He's Sonic.
He's self-conscious about his hands.
He won't wear gloves.
He won't
he's
dirty.
Spiky.
His
he's
royal
blue.
Hands on your lame ass.
Does that include when he's in the healing tank and naked? But that doesn't count because it's...
He didn't take those off, the gloves off.
Yeah, I was going to say it doesn't count.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you. There's a moment in Dragon Ball Super where his gloves come off, and it was weird for me.
Oh, God. That's indecent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Children are watching that show.
It's like Piccolo's knees.
Jason, you were going down a path of logic that I wanted to point out real quick.
Oh, please.
You said that he wears gloves,
uh-huh.
that he is spiky,
uh-huh.
and that he is blue.
Mm-hmm.
These are all true facts.
Yeah.
I think it is definitive proof that he is Sonic the Hedgehog.
He's pretty fast.
That's the trick.
He is fast.
Because he's more akin to Shadow when you think about it.
He's got a lot of attitude.
He does.
Mm-hmm.
Does Where he love chili dogs?
Well, he loves destroying planets. Is that close?
I guarantee that if you ask Toriyama if Vegeta loves chili dogs, he would have a conclusive answer for you.
He would. That's true.
I learned that even in my limited time with this show.
That's the person that
Toriyama is.
Yeah.
Even if before asking it he didn't, he would after he heard the question.
Well, that's how writing works.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
If you have a well-drawn character with depth, you know what their favorite foods are.
Goku needs 10 seconds to complete the Spirit
Bomb. He needs to charge up Solar Beam for a turn.
So he steals his old buddy Tien's technique, the solar flare, to blind Vegeta and buy some time.
I feel like you were like looking directly at me as you said that.
I was looking directly at your icon.
Mm-hmm.
Does that count?
Well, here's my question. Do you need the sun to be out for it to work?
I don't think so.
Like,
I think it's energy that you are producing.
Because he says, like, the sun, now's my chance or something.
I mean, maybe he just thought of it because he saw the sun.
The sun gave him the idea.
Like, he stared at the sun and was like, ow, my eyes. Wait, I can ow his eyes.
That technique has a really good track record for them.
Oh, yeah.
It must be said.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
Success rate is high.
It is useful.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody expects it.
Goku continues to collect the energy. He musters it into the bomb, and well, into his hand anyway, which I guess he's gonna punch at Vegeta? It's unclear.
I like this because, like, you know, Gohan talks to random animals. Goku has obviously upgraded this ability and gained the power to talk to the whole Earth.
Trees, and then rocks, rivers.
The unthinkable happens. Vegeta.
And what is that?
Vegeta commits an anime war crime by interrupting someone else charging their super move.
He knows.
There must be a law against that somewhere.
Yeah, he violates several international anime treaties.
There's definitely something in the Geneva Convention about it.
Yeah, well, he goes by the Vegeta Convention, which is a little bit more lenient.
Oh!
That's strong.
He uses a mouth beam to interrupt Goku.
Mouth beam!
Good mouth beam.
Mouth beam.
The very big ape mouth beam.
That has to hurt.
I'd imagine.
It's gotta hurt the big apes. It probably hurt Piccolo when he did it.
How about Nappa?
Considering
used to
and
it?
Nappa.
I mean, considering something that happens later to somebody while they're using a mouth beam, I feel like it's very likely that hurts
that,
coming out.
That it hurts
a lot.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like it can't originate in the mouth. Right? Like, it doesn't come from, like, saliva glands. It comes from farther down. It
has to come all the way up your esophagus.
Yeah, the beam from the diaphragm, really.
Your proud fan esophagus.
It's at this point that Vegeta crushes Goku's legs under his boot to stop him from running around anymore. And before Vegeta can attack again, Goku uses the last of his energy to just shoot him in the eyeball.
Yep.
From Hell's Heart.
Basically. Yep.
I like that Goku's like, I hope that bought me time. I'm not sure if it did, but...
Well, there's also when he's, you know, menacing him and getting ready to finish him off, Vegeta says that Goku looks scared. Mm-hmm. When in fact he looks alarmingly chill and detached, and it, like, his expression is just like, nice one, dude, you got me.
I mean, he was just dead, so maybe that kind of... Like, takes the sting out of it a little bit. He's like, I'll just do that again.
I'll get to go back to King Kai's and do more training. Always up for training. And my last note is that when squeezed, like when Vegeta is crushing the life out of him,
like a grape,
Goku screams so loud he unhinges his entire jaw. Like, his mouth opens goddamn near 90 degrees.
Oh, it gets worse. They do that shot again in another episode, and it gets, whew.
Yeah, I know.
Far worse. This episode was full of so many good haulers. Haulers of all kinds and all flavors. There's the charging hauler and the angry hauler, and then the my bones are getting crushed hauler, yeah, which is slightly different.
And there's like a good like variety of ouchie haulers too.
Yeah,
and I'm into that.
To be a fan of Dragon Ball Z is to be a connoisseur of haulers.
Jason, how much free time do you have these days?
Not enough these days, honestly.
Because I have a lucrative money-making venture that I would like to suggest to you.
Please.
dbhaulers.wikia.com.
Mm.
Every brand of hauler you can think of, all in one place.
All in wave files.
High-definition audio. Uh-huh.
For your ringtones?
Yeah. HD Rumble.
Oh my god.
I'm very in support.
I mean, you know, if people will buy, like, if people will pay for the Transformers noise as a ringtone.
My question is, can we take this...
We'll get Goku yelling because his bones are gone. That's my ringtone.
That's Vegeta's ringtone. Tell you that much.
My question is, can we take this beyond just a mere digital venture? Can we really get a brick-and-mortar operation off the ground and call the Holler Store?
I'm listening.
How about Holler Bundle? We'll send you prepackaged crates that you subscribe to.
Pay what you want for the Holler Bundle this month. Five screams from an anime.
Mm-hmm. Five?
DRM free to do with as you please.
I think that's called Hoot Crate.
Fuck!
Shit.
That's a... at the brick and mortar store, you would have to have demo stations.
Of course.
So you walk in and it's people like, ideally you would have headphones, but I think it's better if you don't. If the store is just constantly filled with the sound of anime screams.
What I'm picturing in my heart of hearts is, you remember when you would go to like the Target or whatever, and there'd be like this wall of like CDs, and there'd be like little buttons on them for like smooth jazz, country, rock sounds, thunder.
Yep.
And you'd be the brat, the snotty kid that would just push all of them in sequence, like me. You just go in and there's just a bunch of those, and it's just like, Vegeta's super mad, Goku's getting crushed, Gohan's crying this time.
I would love to be able to do that in a crowded Barnes & Noble. Also, are you suggesting that there could not be free samples online?
I just like this screaming demo station concept. That's all I'm saying.
No, I'm into it.
Step into our artisanal scream cubes.
That is so unpleasant to think about.
The opposite of a karaoke booth.
Come on down to Holler Crate and have your eardrums liquidated.
I'm gonna have to find a band named Scream Cube.
And if it doesn't exist, you must found it.
Cannot suggest that they are cruelty free.
Yeah.
As this episode proves.
Well, there are no GMOs, at the very least.
Yeah, they are gluten free.
No pesticides.
They're chock full of Blutz Waves.
Your entire daily recommended amount.
Episode 33, the English title is Hero in the Shadows.
Ooh.
Who could that be?
I'm not sure, but episode...
Is it Yamcha?
Well,
I hope it's Yamcha.
Oh boy.
Maybe it's Tien. Maybe Tien stands back
Maybe.
Up.
Maybe. Well, in Japan, the episode translates to, "Don't die, father. This is Gohan's hidden strength."
That's
is
okay.
He the hero in the shadows? Maybe.
So,
in a way.
So this episode starts off, there are a very consistent pattern in my notes.
Yeah.
Is really good captions for things that aren't dialogue in the subtitles for this show.
What do you got?
Caption brackets, Goku's bones breaking. Which
good to know.
I like very much.
I like this episode begins, again, almost exactly like the last one, which is Gohan and Krillin flying back. Saying that they have almost made it for, like, the fourth time.
It's the new Snake Way.
Yeah. Yajirobe's still not sure what he can do to help. He's just kind of chilling, hanging out behind a rock while Goku screams his head off as his bones are being turned to dust.
Screams his upper jaw off.
Krillin and Gohan arrive, and Krillin immediately remembers the ape form, and he decides it's better to take a stealth approach on this one.
Yeah, probably.
They need to remove the tail. They run into Yajirobe, and they let him in on the plan that the tail needs to go.
I like how while this plan is being formed, you can just very faintly hear in the background just Goku's, like, solid screaming for, like, minutes at a time.
while they're formulating.
Yeah. The voice actor just got his paycheck that week.
There's a lot of that in this show.
They're earning their keep, for sure. So Krillin enacts the plan, and Yajirobe, rather, drives off into the sunset.
He's a big old coward.
Gets the fuck out.
Saying that he has to look out for number one, I believe.
Yes. Kind of begs the question why he was there at all. Because he chose to be there.
Just to kind of see what's up. You know.
Yeah.
See if he can sneak in at the end and stand triumphantly atop Vegeta's broken body when the media arrives.
Get some more free meals out of it.
So it's on Gohan to get Vegeta's attention while Krillin charges up. What's this? It's another Destructo disc. I'm gonna put that in every time we see a Destructo disc.
Please.
Good.
Every single fucking time.
I expect no less.
It's a shame, though, because Vegeta saw right through the plan, and he leaps out of the way of the disc.
This is not his first
time. Gives it like a merry-go-round. A nice little hop.
Here's what's great, is that instead the disc goes flying right for Gohan, cleaves the plateau he's on. Gohan does not lose his footing, but I noticed later that plateau was still painted in for further shots. Like, it was added to the background.
As being cut?
Yes.
That's a good attention to detail.
Yeah, I love that.
That's a surprising attention to detail, honestly.
Definitely. And a great note for here is after Vegeta dodges, he does the slowest, most Oscar-worthy turn to Krillin.
Yeah.
It is delicious.
Right out of Hitchcock's notebook. Is this starting a tradition where the Destructo Disc, specifically Krillin's, never actually hits anybody?
Never finds purchase?
I was thinking about that as well. I'm not sure if it ever works.
Looks cool, though.
You want to keep a counter on that?
We should definitely keep our eyes peeled on that one, because I don't... We might have named ourselves after an attack that never finds purchase.
He is 0 for 2.
Vegeta was concerned about it, so he's doing something right.
There's a character later on who has a very similar attack, but it's got a different name, so I don't think it counts.
But it has a different listing in dbmoves.wikia.
I think it does. Yeah, I don't think the Destructo Disc ever hits a person.
Well, I mean, it's kind of an interesting idea, though, right? Like, so many beams are just like either burn them or blast them away with raw force.
Right.
And very little do we see an actual like cutting motion being taken in.
It seems very just indicative of Krillin. Like, it represents him well. It is it's a cool idea. You tried very good, Krillin.
It's a legitimately terrifying attack, too.
The damn thing just doesn't work.
Like, I feel like a lot of Krillin's rage and frustration went into designing that attack.
Yes.
It's kind of weird because, like, it would make sense to work in this situation because it's, like, the one time he's trying to cut something.
Yeah,
right.
Specifically. Like, the idea is not to kill a person, but just to cut a thing. Just give me this one.
and give that moment to someone else.
They write around it because Yajirobe, in and out like a flash, just cuts off Vegeta's tail with a goddamn sword.
Holy shit, rules of nature.
Like, his Hanzo steel from Earth cuts this ape tail from space.
I mean, this sword seems to have some provenance, which makes me wonder what it could do if it was in the hands of literally anyone other than Yajirobe.
Yeah, like, that's kind of my point, is that Krillin is an important character. Like, he's Goku's best friend. He is, throughout the series, a main player.
Mm-hmm. He never stops trying.
Why give this moment away to somebody who doesn't matter ever and never will?
It was so buck wild. Was one of the moments that I saw and I lost my complete and total mind over. I mean, looking back on it, you're just like, what? But back then, I was like, this is the coolest. He got him with a fucking sword, an earth sword.
So Vegeta is back to a normal size now. It seems to have hurt. Like, he's just kind of undulating as he transforms back.
He painfully de-apes here.
Yeah, he painfully de-apes. And he says a line that I love, in the English dub anyway, which is, "You've disgraced me for the first and final time."
That was a good one.
That is a Vegeta line right there.
And he sets his sights on Gohan. And gives him the tried and true Saiyan headbutt.
Oh yeah,
right in the skull.
That sounded like it hurt.
Yeah,
Gohan does very well here.
We briefly cut back over to everybody at the Kame House watching on the crystal ball, and Chi-Chi is briefly looking comatose, but then just kind of like snaps and is just rooting for Gohan to whoop his ass.
Mm-hmm. I fucking love this moment. She just has a full on soccer mom just. Fuck him up, Gohan.
Get that fucking guy. Don't let him do this to you and your dad.
Chi-Chi shows a lot of concern for Goku when he is not in the room with her.
Mm-hmm.
I can't help but notice that.
This is honestly the Chi-Chi I miss.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not much of a fan of doting mother Chi-Chi.
Doting, smothering mother Chi-Chi. Mm-hmm.
So Gohan does fairly well, but he does get knocked down to where Goku is, and... Gordy, I think that this was your favorite part of these episodes.
You go ahead, because again, I am trying very hard to decipher what my notes mean.
Okay.
Get me started.
Gohan gets knocked down to where Goku is, And Goku kind of tilts his head over and just says, yes. "Gohan, it's dad."
Yes, that is the quote that I wrote down. Just like the pair of them destroyed like, in the dirt.
My name is Goku, and I'm your dad.
Yeah, no shit.
My name is Goku.
Who else would it be?
And I live here.
It's like he knows he came. He came back here for you.
For some fucking reason.
He tells Gohan that he's going to have to be the one to finish off Vegeta using the spirit bomb. Vegeta tells Goku that you, your son, and the bald guy are all going to die.
Doesn't remember his name.
Yeah. He's very done with not being paid attention to. So while Goku is explaining the plan, Vegeta lunges into him and, like, knees him in the guts, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And gives another very good villain line, which is, being a fiend is like being a photographer. You have to wait for the right moment.
Oh my god.
He's fucking on fire right now.
He's used that amazing.
He's so done.
Yeah, this isn't the first time. What a luxury that must be. All the people who have heard his best material are dead.
Yep.
So he can reuse it as many times as he wants.
He's really had time to hone his craft.
Yeah.
He was practicing it all the way to Earth in the pod.
Now,
being a good photographer.
Now I'm just remembering him and Nappa on the bug planet. But you know, we had a little. He understands completely what his role in this narrative is.
Yeah.
And he loves it.
Lives for it.
He eats it up.
He is a fiend.
This much in the same way that he eats bug legs.
Wrong.
So he ends up having to give the energy of the spirit bomb to Krillin, right?
Yes. Gohan is back to keeping Vegeta at bay after this. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Krillin makes his way over to the crippled Goku. And Goku bequeaths the spirit bomb energy to Krillin. So I guess he was just still holding on to it.
I have questions about this.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
How did it hang around, number one? I don't understand mm-hmm. how he just held on to it. And then
where did he put it?
Yes, where does it go? And like, how can he really not like convert it into some kind of energy that he can use?
To heal himself?
Yeah, he says something about being like he's out of energy. Like he uses his last little bit to shoot Vegeta in the eye.
Right.
But he's holding on to a spirit bomb, which is a lot of energy.
No. That's the thing, though. He specifically says that when he got interrupted, he lost most of it, but he has a little bit of it left. Mm. Enough to give to Krillin to do a spirit bomb. It's like, wait a minute, you only needed a little bit?
Then why did he take so much of it?
Why did he take 10 whole seconds and get his ass beat?
Yeah, take 9 seconds and give him 90% of that.
It's King Kai I'm starting to become more and more suspicious of.
No. Let's be a little bit easier on Goku. It's like when you take that third swing against a boss when you know you can only take two.
Ah, you overextend.
Yeah, like in Dark Souls. One more and it'll go down.
You get greedy. Sure.
I mean,
fair enough, we've all been there.
I get that, but like surely he could, like if it is a tiny little spirit bomb, like just convert it into some consumable. Make your own little senso bean.
A spirit
and charge
bomb.
Yourself back.
Make it into an Estus flask.
I'd be willing to bet Goku's never thought of that in the entirety of this whole franchise.
That he could take Boom Boom energy and turn it into something healing.
Yeah.
There's one specific time where he explicitly does it, but to somebody else. Goku gives the spirit bomb energy over to Krillin, and Krillin asks, "Can I handle it?" And Goku says, "You have to." Like we are beyond the time for questions, Krillin.
That's a good moment.
We are in the moment now.
You got it.
Right. It's a genuinely good moment.
Plans A through Y have gone out the window, Krillin.
Yeah. We have reached Dragon Ball Z. And the episode ends with Krillin gaping awestruck at the spirit bomb in his hands.
Fully formed.
Yep.
It's kind of fascinating. Goku manages to give Krillin these in medias res spirit bomb lessons. I'm imagining...
He gets a quick tutorial.
And Krillin literally says, "Oh my god, it worked! Oh my god, I did it right!"
Did he?
I'm just imagining,
Krillin?
Like, the pottery wheel scene from Ghost?
Yeah.
Where it's just, like, four loving hands carefully spin this spirit bomb into shape.
Did Goku try to give it to Gohan at first?
He was going to. He didn't actually.
So Krillin get was to it. Like was his second choice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Krillin was plan Z.
Yeah.
Like, you have to, Krillin. Gohan can't anymore. the child poor. Cannot do it. Yeah.
Poor
There's
Krillin.
There's no fucking way we're giving it to Yajirobe.
This whole ending bit really brings into the question what we've been asking all night, which is, like, is King Kai a bad teacher? Because Goku seemed to teach Krillin how to do a spirit bomb real quick. Or at least enough to get one out. Yeah. Like, after gathering the energy.
Well, actually, no. You know what it is? It's that what happened to Roshi before him is now happening to King Kai. It took me, you know, 3 months to teach you how to do the Kaioken, but you taught him how to do it in 5 minutes!
It's,
Goku is just a legacy, like, destroyer.
He really is.
Maybe the teaching of Kaioken and Spirit Bomb happened off-screen in a recap for a reason, because mm-hmm. King Kai might have just kind of glossed over the details.
Any other final thoughts for episode 33?
I'm going to circle back to one moment.
Yeah. A note that you've deciphered.
It's not a... it's card related. And I don't remember.
Oh, right. We skipped right over it.
I think it happened at the... After Vegeta de-apes... I'm pretty sure he like spins around and kicks, I think, Gohan in the face. Does anybody remember this?
I think so.
Yeah, it's a like it's a quick moment, but I do have like that exact moment as a card, and it reads: really?
"Give us the stats."
Physical damage makes sense to me, right? It's a physical combat card called Red Back Kick. I don't know what the colors are about. Some of them are red, some are black, some are blue, some are orange. No idea. Factions, maybe. Damage at +3 stages. Don't understand this either.
I think red is what child abuse is filed under, maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
That could be.
It's a damage type, like in Magic.
You may lower your anger 3 levels to stop all energy attacks this combat. And, like, I have a couple character cards here. There's only, like, one set of numbers. And I don't know if that's anger or damage or health or what's going on there.
Maybe it's all of it.
Could be. Maybe it's everything.
It's
I don't
just
know.
One pool that you use for everything.
There's stages of damage and there's levels of anger. I don't know where you track this stuff.
I love this game.
It seems very good.
It's, yeah. The physical attack part makes sense to me. I don't know why you would lower your anger in this situation. Seems like you should raise it.
Yeah.
You would think.
Well, maybe it's one of those things where, like, the smaller anger number is, like, one is more angry than 10.
Oh, maybe. It's like golf. Lowers. It's kind of...
We need to stop for a moment and appreciate the fact that we just compared the Dragon Ball Z trading card game to golf.
Probably a lot of similarities.
Dragon Ball Z is just furious golf.
Anger golf.
Now watch this drive.
I'm hovering. My mouse is hovering over the order button on a starter deck. There are, in this one, 69 cards inside. Nice.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nice.
And that'll probably generate a lot more data.
Probably.
Mm-hmm. Well. Can you get that on an Amazon Dash button?
Yeah, I need a button on my desk that'll bring me more DBZ cards.
I had another kind of character realization for Vegeta during the beam struggle. And yes. I've noticed that after it's implied that the Galaga Gun is Vegeta's most powerful attack.
Mm-hmm. A signature move.
Mm-hmm. It is his Kamehameha. After this point, I've
his
noticed
Dodon Ray.
It becomes more of a desperation move, and he uses it very, very infrequently. I think Goku has ruined this move for Vegeta. I think he can't use it without thinking of the time that Goku blew him into space.
You think it gave him a complex?
I'm into that. add to this pile of complexes that he already has relating to Goku.
I mean, going forward, Vegeta is kind of known for coming up with new signature moves pretty frequently.
That's cool.
Like, more so than a lot of the other characters. Like, he's an experimenter with his moveset.
He really is.
He keeps inventing new ones. And I like that as an explanation. Like, can this beat Kakarot? Nah, fuck it. I suck. This move sucks. I need a better one.
He throws it away like a gun that's out of ammo.
Yep.
Like Jack Slate being done.
It's just his moveset is built on self-deprecation.
Between him and Krillin, this is a very depressing world.
And Goku's the reason for it.
If that's all for the episodes this week, it's time to hail Satan.
Hail Satan.
Yeah, let's do a brief recap of where we left Mark off last week. And I will say, I'm going to keep calling him Mark until we canonically decide when he gets the name Hercule.
Oh, yeah.
So, last time, Mark and Cannoli are vigilante crime fighters. Mark confiscated a mansion for himself last week to live in, now that there's a lot of dead people on Earth from the Saiyan invasion. Mark and Cannoli were rounding up people who vaguely looked like Vegeta and Nappa based on what they saw on the news, and were bringing them to the cops. And because Vegeta was doing a very big power-up and summoning birds towards him for some reason, Mark convinced himself that the birds were actually meant for him, and that he was summoning the birds, and now he has bird powers. So, Mark and Cannoli were on their way to the Summit of World Leaders, who were on TV talking about what to do about the alien attacks, to tell them that they were going to save the day.
Well, I think before anything, Mark needs to realize that his bird powers need to be incorporated into his identity, and they need to be incorporated into his costume.
How so?
I think we've got some options. We're either going to
A cape?
A cape, perhaps a flowing, feathery cape?
Well, this immediately, to me, presents an incredible opportunity, which is, does Mark have a costume designer? And if he does, who is it? Or does he design his own?
That's a good question. It would have to be sanctioned through the Satan Dojo.
Of course.
I feel like Miss Pizza would probably fit that role pretty well.
She moonlights as a costume designer. Yeah. Does he have his costume prepared for his moment on TV that he's rushing towards?
He must.
Is that how he's seen to the world?
He's only got, how many chances is he going to have
for a first impression like this?
He's got it lined up.
This you know, this is where his showmanship
The first time we see Mark, he's in a brown gi with white pants.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that's not the first iteration of his costume that we see. I think his first
Has a very big cape.
Very big cape.
When he shows up.
Well, we can imagine, you know, they're driving towards the summit of the, you know, world leaders.
Changing in the car as they drive.
Well, no, take one step further. I imagine Cannoli driving while Mark is like squeezed into the back seat with a laptop on a video call with Miss Pizza, trying to get the costume just right. He has to tell, you know, Piccolo not to look in the rearview mirror while he changes into each version of it.
Yeah,
it's very shameful.
At what point do they see a very big beam in the sky? Because that happened this week,
right?
I'm going to give you guys a hypothetical that
please.
I feel is very on brand with Mr. Satan. He is at the summit. He's somehow forced his way past security, gotten onto TV, is frantically explaining to everyone that he is a superhero with bird powers, and he has captured the aliens, and everything's fine now, and then there's a very big beam in the sky.
That's supposed to happen.
How does he get out of that one?
That is his,
What is Mr. Satan's explanation for the very big beam in the sky?
That is the fireworks show he planned to commemorate his victory.
That's his mission accomplished?
It was set on a timer. It's gonna go off whether it was accomplished or not.
He actually did set up fireworks, but they didn't go off.
So no, did they not go off, or was, you know, Pigoro's hand poised over the trigger button after the beam went off?
Yeah, hand on enough. The plunger. And yeah. Then he looks off into the horizon.
Yeah. And Mark's just really impressed by his craftsmanship.
Yeah, see?
Wow, we did a great job with those fireworks. Can only slap them real hard on the back.
Really, really brought those together under short notice.
Cannoli's resourceful, what can I say?
Yeah. But in reality, all he had were, like, firecrackers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not even good
some
ones.
Some cherry bombs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He presumably, he carries off this incredible scam that
I believe that he does pull this off. Like, he convinces everyone that he captured the aliens.
Even he, at this point, is not sure how much of it is a scam and how much isn't.
Right. The lines have blurred.
Yeah, he starts to believe his own gospel. And so, what if this is our last question for tonight? There is one person who witnesses all of this who doesn't buy it.
One human?
Person on Earth. Or at least one person who's directly witnesses his spectacle.
Yeah.
Who is it that doesn't buy it?
I mean, it would have to be Videl, right?
I do know King Dog is buying into it 100%.
Oh yeah, King Furry is planning a parade.
Yeah, he was into Mr. Satan before it was cool.
He's watching the TV, just shouting, "That's my boy!"
I always knew he'd get his big break.
Oh my god! What?
Oh, Mark.
Yeah, because there's no news footage or anything of Vegeta as a giant ape. I don't think anyone on Earth other than the Z crew know that part happens.
Mm-hmm.
True.
And they got other shit to worry about afterwards.
Yeah. So I think while the rest of the fight is going on, the Earth is just going back to status quo.
Yeah.
And parades are being planned for Mr. Satan or Mark.
We won.
Who is referred to as a regular day Hercules, but the S gets left off.
It was a typo. Yeah. Someone was trying to save ink.
I like that.
The world is saved by the new age Hercules.
Yeah, what most of the news crew died in the blast, so it's really just the intern who's left who writes the head writes the headline Regaday Hercule.
It is like a ripe environment for fake news and misinformation right now.
Yeah.
The narrative is his to take control of.
How many different things do the Saiyans get blamed on? Like, how many bad explanations for where the Saiyans came from and why this happened get come up with in this period?
What do you mean?
Like, wrong explanations that someone's trying to use to push an agenda. Like, the aliens were, you know, God's vengeance upon us for being sinful or whatever.
They're why the moon's gone.
Again. Oh, of course.
True.
Which that was them.
Blew it up on their way
technically,
to Earth.
Yeah.
It was destroyed by an alien.
They came here to destroy our moon so they can affect our tides.
This is all going to tie back in somehow to the podcast, the Truther podcast that the Saiyans did on their way from system to system. This is a rich tapestry that's all tying back together.
We canonized that the farmer is alive, right?
Yes, sure. You did.
I believe so, yeah.
Because the bullet hit his gun and we didn't see him actually die.
Oh, I see where you go with this.
So he is absolutely clued into the alien conspiracy theory now as a survivor.
No.
Oh wow. Is he the Beach City Weird editor of the Dragon Ball Z world?
Absolutely God. He is. Because he has a fucking space pod on his farm still.
True.
He is selling
no
tours.
One will believe him about it.
He has access to the podcasts.
Holy shit!
We're gonna tear this wide open.
The smoking gun.
He is building a museum as we speak.
Well, hang on a second. We have to think about this.
Yeah.
Not only does that was Raditz's pod, right?
Yes.
Not only does didn't Raditz's pod blow up?
Oh, it did. Gohan blew it up.
Go ahead and Gohan blow it up.
Oh, that's right. Well, he busted out of it to. Did it completely
was there anything
explode?
Left?
Maybe the farmer found the pieces.
Because like, if he has access to that pod's systems,
yeah,
not only does he have access to the podcast, but he has access to everything that Raditz had saved on that computer, which means he has access to all the self-affirmation tapes.
Yeah.
And just a picture into this profoundly depressed person's mind.
Maybe he saved the tapes, yeah.
Yeah, the black box.
Yeah.
What's this here Saiyan pride?
Is this a gay thing?
I'm done.
Well,
oh my
before
God.
We say goodbye, it's time for a little... What even is this, Jason?
I don't know.
This is your segment now.
This is the heretofore unnamed segment where we flip open to the horoscope section and...
Yeah.
And read out some advice for one of our characters, because some of these characters do have canonical birthdays and thus canonical signs.
We want these characters to grow as people,
mm-hmm.
even though we are fully aware that they're all drawings from 1980.
Exactly. And have I got a bit of advice for Yajirobe this week?
Please.
Now, as you know, Yajirobe, he doesn't actually have a canon birthday.
Who would care?
Exactly.
To ask.
So I had to go with the day his manga debuted. So that's August 8th. So that means Mr. Yajirobe's a Leo.
Okay.
So let's try and reflect on where this fell during this arc here. So Yajirobe, aspects of your life that you've neglected lately might haunt you on a day like today. Make sure you're keeping up with all your responsibilities. Things may come to a dramatic climax at this time, and you could find yourself at an important crossroads. Nervous energy could cause you to run around frantically in search of the right path. Don't let indecision keep you from getting where you need to go.
We've only done two of these, and they've both been fucking awesome.
That's how astrology shit works, man.
That seems so spot on.
Yeah.
I'm so excited to see where this segment goes in the future.
God.
Damn. Well, this has been another episode of Destructo Discourse. Thank you all for listening. Jason, where can we find you on the internet?
Yeah, you can find me on both Tumblr and Twitter under JCalves. That's JAYCALVES.
Matt, how about yourself?
You can't find me because I'm not real.
I knew
this whole time.
Yeah,
you're a ghost.
Yeah. A ghost in the machine.
Nah, I'm kidding. I'm on Twitter at Monumentus Matt.
A ghost who is Tien's biggest fan.
Yeah. That's very fitting.
A little bit. I wasn't gonna say it.
Please introduce yourself that way in the future to anyone you meet. Hi, I'm a robot ghost who loves Tien. Nice to meet you.
I can't.
Dave, how about you? Where can we find you on the internet?
No, nowhere yet, but perhaps soon.
We can find you on Destructo Discourse.
Ah. Yeah, this is your primary source for Dave content.
Your name Dave is Dave, and you live here.
Bam.
Gordy, how about you?
Find me on Twitter at GordonMurphyDEV.
Anywhere else?
If you want to, you can listen to another podcast that Tyler and I do called What the Folklore. Is about messed up fairy tales.
Comes out every Tuesday and Sunday.
Every Tuesday, Sunday. And just search for that.
Yeah.
You'll find it.
As for this show, you can follow us on Twitter at Destructo_Disc, DISC. You can email us at DestructoDiscourse@gmail.com. Please, if you will, rate and review the show on iTunes. And as always, please give it a 4-star rating.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we giving it 4-star ratings?
Well,
that's one less than the maximum.
Exactly.
Who would be crazy enough to ask for that?
Why would we be settling for second best? Well, I'll tell you why. It's the 4-star ball, guys.
Oh, it's like an iconic Dragon Ball thing.
It's like a thing. Come on.
Give us the Gohan.
Give us the Gohan.
Give us the Gohan.
Have a heart.
Give up the Gohan.
Give us the Gohan.
Have a heart.
For pennies a day.
For pennies a day, you can give us... For no pennies a day.
0 pennies.
It's free. Just give us that Gohan. What are you going to do with them? Thank you all for listening. We will see you next week Until then, this has been Destructo Discourse. The road ahead you seem so cold and gray. When night never turns to day, don't you be afraid, go fly away. Chala, chala, no time to hesitate. Don't want to search the earth, but then it was a magic surprise. Get you through the night, oh chala, hey chala. No time to hesitate, don't search the earth. We're dinner by the magic surprise, oh chala, hey chala. Be cool, don't be afraid, you got the power to get you through the darkest night, chala.